Welcome in Lineup Logic. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. With me, as always, Alex Romanzowski. How are we doing today, Alex?
Good. I'm glad to be back. You know, it's tough to get over this Masters, a little bit of a Masters hangover here, but you got no choice.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So let's talk the Masters for a minute. We got Patrick Reed hanging on for 15 under, win his first Masters. What was your overall impression of his performance?
I mean, honestly, it was pretty incredible. I feel like Patrick Reed showed the world, even though I guess you probably already should have known this, because when he's in these situations, he's just a great pressure player. If he's in any type of spot that you think someone who hasn't been leading the Masters going into Saturday and then going into Sunday, if you haven't been there before, you think they're gonna, you know, have a little trouble with it. And he honestly did anything but that. Like, Rory even like said it himself, all the pressure's on him, which was just like, it was just a death sentence for Rory, apparently, but he was unfazed by it. It was honestly awesome to watch. I like Patrick Reed. I know a lot of people have other opinions, but it's impressive what he's done.
Yeah, as Stu Scott would say, he's cool as the other side of the pillow. I was pretty happy with Reed's performance because we both put him in our pivot section on the cheat sheet. I had him in some lineups. I know you did. I gave him to a lot of people who were reaching out to me, you know, for like office pools that had tiering structures. And, you know, he was way down in like the fourth or fifth tier. And I was like, why not? You know, just go Patrick Reed there. That none of the other names are really very exciting. Definitely helped some people.
I was going back in my text messages from Monday and Tuesday before the Masters, and I was telling everybody who asked me if I had any picks or anybody I liked, I would give them kind of my top 10 or 15 people. And I had Patrick Reed highlighted, and I said, Patrick Reed is my sleeper. And I had like three or four people I texted that directly to. I've like taken screenshots and kicked myself in the face a million times for not actually betting him. But, you know, I had him in a couple lines on DraftKings and that paid. So you can only do so much, but I was so into him Monday and Tuesday. And then I kind of scaled my expectations on him. I actually really liked Berger at that point in time, which, I mean, as far as anyone is concerned, Berger did nothing. He made the cut, but he was, you know, we didn't see him probably hit a shot all weekend.
Yeah, my Patrick Reed push is, covered up for my Kiradek Appy Barnrap advice that I gave some people.
Hey, I mean, he made the cut by a hair. And
he did. When I saw he made the cut, I had no clue how he pulled that off.
Yeah, that was actually really funny because that totally helped you out. I remember looking at one point, I don't know if it was after Thursday or during Friday.
It was on Saturday.
He had negative 0.4 points on FanDuel, I think. Yeah. And I was like, ooh.
He hadn't made a birdie, a lot of bogeys. You know, it was, but he somehow scraped through and got to the, I think it was 5 over was the cut.
Yeah. And then he accumulated some points there and, you know,
he did hit a couple birdies. Yes, so helped me out, you know, from where he could have been. But yeah, you know, I know you were disappointed. Ricky finished second. I was as well. I had a bet for Ricky to win it, laid down. The only Reed action I had was, I had in a matchup bet, Patrick Reed over, I think it was Tyrrell Hatton. So I won a couple bucks on that.
Yeah, you know, I was.
But really going into it.
Go on.
Go ahead.
I'm always a Ricky guy. I was waiting for Ricky to win. I wanted to see him. Jordan Spieth and Ricky are like my two guys. As a golf fan, those are the two guys I want to win. And watching them make that comeback on Sunday, I'm sitting there thinking, like, this would be amazing to see this happen. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I know I got a Patrick Reed line right now. And I know Patrick Reed is lower owned than most of these guys. So if he holds first here, that's going to be the better look for me. So it was a little bit of a back and forth in my head. But, I mean, Ricky Fowler is just the king of top fives and majors and runners up, and like it'll come to him eventually.
Yeah. And it was actually the opposite of what he usually does. You know, Sunday is usually a bad day for him. Sunday was his best day. He gave it a hell of a run to get to 14 under and make Patrick Reed hold serve one stroke better.
Yeah. And, I think that was the big difference.
Felt like that was coming to a playoff.
Yeah. I thought it was going to come to a playoff too. And Patrick Reed just didn't screw up. Like every time you thought, oh, like that might hurt him, it was like either he drained a putt or he put his approach or chip to 6 feet and then made that putt. It was just like he didn't miss a putt all weekend. He was like rock solid. And my favorite part was just learning so much about Patrick Reed that no one has ever known or cared about. Like, apparently the dude is like the weirdest guy on the PGA Tour, and I kind of love it personally. I know a lot of people don't, but I thought it was fun. And like, go Patrick Reed, whatever.
Right. Hey, if you're winning me money, I'm a fan.
Yeah, so true.
But, you know, it going into Sunday, it really felt to me like Patrick Reed was just keeping it warm for Rory, and he was going to either, you know, catch him or pass him. And Rory fell apart a little bit. And that's kind of where the wheels came off for me, just a hair. I mean, he didn't sink me or anything, but on Saturday, my payouts were looking a lot better than they ended up being. A lot to do with Rory, I think. But speaking of payouts, our own Alex Remezowski here took down the Tiger Jam contest on DraftKings, won himself some tickets to Tiger Jam out. It's in Vegas.
It's
right?
In Vegas. It was a pretty big surprise, actually. So I had a lot going on this weekend, and I barely played the week before being out of the country. So I was like, hey, you know what? All the better. I can go twice as big for the Masters. And, you know, especially for these majors, sometimes I get a little reckless and I'll have my lineup set now. Multi-enter a couple tournaments, you know, Wednesday night that still have some space back in them. And what I've come to realize is that a lot of these qualifiers, a lot of these random, like the Tiger Jam contest on DraftKings, they get overlooked and like it, not a lot of people care that much about them. So I entered a few lines in there and opened up my – I didn't look – so another thing, like you were saying, you had the payout Saturday night and then Sunday everything changes. With an 84-man field consisting of, like, if you look at that top 15, it's just insane. Like, we're talking – Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, Rory, Henrik, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, like the list goes on. So, you know, things are bound to get mixed up a little there. So you could think you're winning $1 million Saturday night and then be down to like $100 or $0 by Sunday. So I took the wait and see and don't look all weekend. You know who you're playing, root for your guys. And I literally held true to that until the last putt went in, which was exciting.
That's the way to do it. And that's my preferred approach too. Like I don't want to sweat this guy versus this guy. Like I just want to enjoy it for whatever I get to watch it. And for anything, like baseball is the worst sport to sweat, in my opinion. Last night I was watching, I had all the Mets outfield in my lineup. And both Cespedes and Jay Bruce came to bat with the bases loaded and both struck out. It's just like soul crushing.
Yeah.
But, I'm right there with you. I'd rather, like you said, you know who you played, like you can root for them, but I don't want to have to like start doing calculus to figure out, I need this guy to finish, you know, top 10. I need this guy to win. I need this guy to fall out of contention. Like, just enjoy the golf or whatever it is you're playing.
Especially like in an event such like as big as the Masters, like you're going to be stressing yourself out for 4 days straight. Like, just think about where the field was Friday after one round as to where it ended up 3 days later Sunday. Like, a lot changed, and you could just be doing all this math in your head and it's all for nothing. So I just, you know, I was like Patrick Reed. I think I am going to benefit from this win in one way or another. And it worked out. It worked out. It was awesome. I mean, when I saw that Tiger Jam thing, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was just like praying for no stat corrections, first of all. Because I know that's happened before, but I was ahead by 4 points. So I was like, yeah. I should be good. Like, didn't want to say anything right to anyone. And then finally, like, I got that like actual credit to the account. And I was like, wow, I can't believe this is actually happening. And then I look it up and it's like, wow, this looks like the craziest thing. Like, and it has my name written all over it. So I'm pumped. I'm excited for that. And it's next month.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I was just browsing some of the contests, and I came across that one middle of the week, and I saw your entry in there because your entry starts with an A, and I was like, oh, Alex is in this one, and you know, so I didn't end up putting anything in, but yeah, that was a great lineup. Congrats on that, man. And you know, for you guys listening, those were all guys we talked about. Those were all guys off of Alex's cheat sheet. Just put them together in the right combination, and you know, to toot our own horn a little bit, we had a great week, especially for something as hard as the Masters. Our rankings were really good. The cheat sheet was great. If you guys aren't subscribing to the full Patreon tier to get the full content, do it. You're gonna make your money back. I promise you. So you know, check that out if you're not there yet. And it makes golf much more enjoyable when you're winning.
Yeah, and so, I'll say we're heading into like the good part of the season. Like, people ask me when I say like, oh, it's just been like, it's been a weird golf season so far, because it has, and like a lot of strange things have been happening. And it was like very nice to be reassured seeing so much success on the Masters, where the Masters is all these guys that we know. And it's the golf that you're going to be seeing in some of these bigger tournaments coming up in the second half of the season. And like, so when we start seeing success here, you know, it's going to keep coming, and it's reassuring on all angles here. So like, it was a great week. Like you said, those were all guys we talked about. I kept a nice tight player pool there. Like, I didn't go anything too crazy, and I pretty much played exactly who I was talking about. And I think I had one missed cut out of my probably 15 or 16 person player pool personally, and that was Alex Noren, which was annoying, but it's Alex Noren. You just don't know. So it was a good win.
I guess his game just doesn't match Augusta, but
I guess that
he bit me too. He had me in I had a Reed Ricky lineup, and he was in that one and held that one back. I still think I was over 500 points, so it cashed pretty decent. But I only put one entry. I only put one entry into the Millie Maker, and I had Patrick Reed in that one. I don't think I had Ricky. I think I went Rory McIlroy instead. So that was one of the spots where, like, if Rory would have held on Sunday and not posted a positive number, I could have made a few more bucks. But
yeah, that's probably true. I'll say one last thing before we move on, which is just like reinforcing what we were saying last week, which is just honestly kind of blows my mind. So that lineup on DraftKings, I was entered in the Millionaire Maker, which, as we all know, was a $20 entry. It scored well enough for a 142nd place. That's 142. There were Let me make sure I get this right. There were 206,000 entries, just under that. So we're talking 206,000 entries. I came in 142nd with that lineup. That is coming in the top 0.04%, I believe. 0.07%.
It takes not only a special lineup, like a crazy set of circumstances to finish even top 50, top 100 in the Millie Maker. It's just such a big field. So, you know, we all do it here and there. I did it because it was the Masters, but your money is better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, like you're not going to set the lineup that comes in 142nd out of 206,000 very often, and it was not that profitable. So I'll just say that it was $250, right, and you're 100 spots away from a
million. It's very tough.
It's like, it's crazy. It truly is. It's crazy.
Yeah, the biggest GPPs are extremely top heavy. So yeah, you're better off in cash games. You know, not for the Masters like we talked about, but cash games, small field GPPs, 100 mans. You know, $1,000 single entry. I'm sorry, 1,000 contestant single entry kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Single entry, three entry.
We're getting
max,
back to
baby.
That this week.
All day.
Yep, that's where it's at. That's where it's at. You know, build the bankroll. Don't go for broke. But yeah, let's jump into this week. It's like you said in the article. It's a field. there's names that are going to be here. You know, tell us a little bit about what we're getting here for the RBC, and then we'll jump into the tiers.
All right, so it's the RBC Heritage at Harbortown Golf Links in Hilton Head, South Carolina. It's Pete Dye course. We've seen a few of these. We will see a few more of these.
It's like the perfect follow up to the Masters. Like, it's just a quiet kind of resort town. Not a lot going on.
not a lot going on. It's a very interesting looking course. The pros are, there's a lot of guys very familiar with this course. It's been going on for, this is its 50th year. So we got stats to work with. It's 7,099 yards. It's a par 71. That's a very short course. So if you look at any pictures of this course, if you see the layout, it's tight, it's short, there's a lot of bunkers, well-protected greens. The rough isn't necessarily anything to be scared about, but kind of similarly to some of these courses we've seen previously this season, like honestly looking at these, I have this up on my screen right now, it's going through the 18 holes. And I think I get about 2 or 3 seconds with a picture on each hole, and then it moves to the next. There are trees lining every single fairway. There's these massive, crazy-shaped bunkers just about everywhere. And there's a lot of water, and the greens are extremely small. And some of them are pretty weird-looking, like, you know, long, thin greens that pretty much that are going to be favoring people who can pinpoint approach shots. I know I say that almost every week, but this is another one of those weeks that you really, 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 really have to hit these greens, because you're going to hit in one of these funky bunkers or the water if you miss the green. And if you're lucky enough to stay out of those, there comes the importance of the short game. So honestly, looking at the pictures, it's reminding me a lot of the WGC Mexico, where if you miss the fairway, you're in the trees. So, and it's very short, so there's not going to be a ton of drivers. So we're going to see people hitting irons off the tee. You got to put them in the right place to position yourself properly. And that's pretty much what I have to say about the course. You got 3 par 5s, 4 par 3s. It's a lot of par 4s, and they're not that long.
Yeah, definitely a tight course, like you said, hazards and you know, from what I've gathered, there's going to be a lot of sand saves that are going to come into play. And that was one of the stats that I noticed. The winners of this tournament have always done extraordinarily well in is sand saves. So that's, if you're looking to find the winner, he's probably going to be somebody that can get up and down out of a bunker.
Yeah, you know, that is a very good point. I think I heard that mentioned somewhere, and that's a good stat to look at. I'm actually going to pull that up. Maybe I can integrate this into some of what we're about to talk about.
Yeah. Let's jump in at the top then. Really only one big name. You got DJ there, 12,000. Give me your take on DJ, because I'm not that interested this week.
Yeah, I mean, 12,000 is, it's a big number. He's 2,800 on FanDuel, like very, very far ahead of the next grouping of people on both sites. It's a lot to ask for DJ, who we haven't seen a ton out of. So pretty much I'm going to say what I said in the write-up yesterday, is I think it's very, very easy to start building below him, even like quite a bit below him if you choose to go that route. Like, we have a ton of value down low. Really, there's so many good plays in this field that Dustin Johnson, the way he's been playing, I just don't think it's necessary. Now, with that said, I do think he's Dustin Johnson in a field of, he's like the shark in the field of fish here, and he could go out there and win this thing by 8 strokes, and it really wouldn't surprise me at all. But with this course,
it wouldn't surprise me if he went. But
yeah, you know,
I just feel like he's going to be middle, you know, middle of the pack, like top 30 for, you know, if I had to guess. But I just don't think he's going to pay off that price tag, because it's the course, just it takes away his strengths, and it forces you to use some of the things that he's got, you know, some deficiencies in his accuracy, things like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think
he's a trap.
Yeah, like, I could see him, he has one bad round and that'll be it for him. And like, he's kind of been doing that lately, where he has 3 very good rounds, but then he shoots like a 74 and that pulls him out of it. He does that Thursday, Friday, and you're not going to be very happy. So for his price, I mean, it's a definite potential fade.
And last time we saw him at a tight course, at the Genesis, in Riviera, he had some trouble. He was in the trees, off the tee a good bit.
But, yeah, that's
all right. So what else do we have? We have 3 more guys, 4 more guys in this tier. Anybody you like?
Yeah. So we got Paul Casey, Matt Kuchar, Mark Leishman, pretty much. Paul Casey, that was my one cut sweat of the Masters, and I was like literally freaking out. I was like at a little bit of a family gathering, and I was in the other room, like, yelling pretty much. It was honestly like the most fun thing to watch, just because it turned out well. I noticed that he's on like 14th hole, and I think he was 6 over, and he needed to be, was the cup 5 or 4?
I think it was 5.
Yeah. So he's 6 over. He needs to go 1 under through his last 5 holes. And then he goes, I think, par, birdie, par, whatever he did, it came down to that last hole. And then he, on 18, he sticks it to like 4 feet. And I'm like, yes. And I leave the room and I'm like, we're good. I'm like, hopping on the Slack chat. Like, I'm talking about how, like, thank God, like, Paul Casey just made it. And then he puts that 4-footer probably 3 feet past the hole. And I'm like, oh, yep, God, yep, please no. And he put it in and he made the cut. For this week, 11-3, it's a similar situation to Dustin Johnson, only I trust Paul Casey more here. And he had a great Sunday at the Masters. However, there's just like, if 11-3 is just, it's tough. It's a lot to ask for Paul Casey in this situation. He doesn't have great course history. He played here in 2014 and 2016. He came in T18 and 14 and then got cut in 2016. It's just like, it doesn't stand out much to me for the price. If he were down there in the nines, I would say he's a must play. But I think he's another guy that you can definitely pass up. Would you agree with that?
I agree with it. What I'm struggling with so far this week, though, is like because of the limited field, you're going to have a hard time spending on guys that seem like they're the right salary. Like, you know, Casey's, everybody's jacked up a little bit in price because of the, you know, the lack of names. And, you know, normally my preference is to pound the eights and the nines and just get value there. And it's going to work out more times than it's not. That may be hard to do this week. So you may need to reach up for one of these guys and you could do worse than Casey.
Yeah. As I was trying to like, just put a few tentative lineups together, I did actually notice like you can easily fit Paul Casey in, you can easily fit Matt Kuchar in with like a one of those 9K guys, and then still have four other guys like I definitely like this week. There's a lot of, it's kind of like last week where you kind of feel like you could play anyone you want. And so it's definitely possible. And Paul Casey does stand out in this crowd. But with that said, I personally would much rather go down to a Matt Kuchar, which if we're talking about his ownership, that could sway things a bit for me. But he's gained over 44 strokes on this course in the past 5 years. In his time here, he's 10-8, which is like a totally reasonable price considering the two guys above him, considering who's below him.
Yep.
His past 4 years, he's come in T11, T9, 5, and he won in 2014. And I think something people are going to talk about is how much energy are you going to have after playing four rounds at the Masters and being somewhat in the mix? That is, in my mind, a legitimate question to ask yourself. But we do know Matt Kuchar plays in the Masters every single year and pretty much
comes here.
Yeah. And he does well in the Masters and then he does well here. So I think you can pretty much forget about that in the case of Matt Kuchar. The dude's a machine, even though he's getting old, like it just doesn't make a difference. And I think we've seen him kind of on an upswing from where he was a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I like Kuchar a little better in a cash lineup. But he's won here, and it's not a hard field to beat. So, you know, like I said, there's going to be ownership on him because he had a solid Masters. His name was on the leaderboard a good bit. And then, you know, his course history. Leishman, I'll pass on Leishman, even though he did have a couple good rounds at the Masters. He's just too inconsistent for me.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm going to fade Leishman here too. He doesn't have great course history. If you're even just looking at course history, like Matt Kuchar far surpasses him. You look at his Masters compared to the week following at Harbortown, and it's like he's pretty much top 25 in both of them every single year, if not top 10. So it's like the obvious option to me is just pay up a little bit for Matt Kuchar, even if he's going to be a little higher owned. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be insanely high owned here. So that makes Mark Leishman a little bit of an easier fade for me.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the nines. Who are some names you like here?
Oh, you know what? I got to start with my guy, Webb Simpson. I just have to. He's another guy. Like, we talk about these shorter courses, and I am immediately drawn to my two favorites of Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson. And both of them are like, they're coming into form in a way. I think we've seen them have a little bit of a struggle in this season, but like Webb's past few starts prior to the Masters, the WGC Mexico, he finished middle of the field, and then he came in T8 at the Valspar and then T20 at the Masters. He's only 9,400 and he has some great course history. And I believe I have some putting stats here. Yeah, so I pulled a rolling report of strokes gained putting on Bermuda grass over each player's last 4, 8, 12, 24, 50, and 100 rounds in this field. And what stands out to me is over his last 8, 12, and 24 rounds putting on Bermuda grass, He's eighth in the field, sixth in the field, and fifth in the field. If he's going to be hitting fairways, if he's going to get that, pretty much if he's going to be able to hit the green in regulation, you're going to be able to trust him to make putts and to pretty much do what he needs to do to finish, hopefully, top five, top 10, possibly. I think he's a very viable option to win this thing.
Yeah, and what interests me about Webb here is you look at his Masters, two eagles, 15 birdies. That's exemplary. You know, most guys are not double digits in birdies, let alone eagles. So his short game was working around the green, and that's what you need at this course coming up.
Yeah, big time. I like that. I like that stat there. That only further interests me in Webb. I think the next person a lot of people may be looking at here going down from him. Do you have any thoughts on Brian Harman?
I haven't been able to get him right this year, so I'm probably going to stay away.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you. I think people might kind of be into him this week, but he's another guy that I'd put in the Mark Leishman bucket and move on. Ian Poulter, I'm saying no to. He's had good history here, but he's been playing a ton. He didn't show us that much. He's
trying for a letdown as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I would have to skip on down to the duo here at 9,8900 of Cam Smith and Luke List, who I like them both quite a bit. How do you feel about those two?
Interested in Cam Smith. He really showed something in the Masters and has been trending in the right direction lately. He was solid at the match play as well. So starting to figure it out on the tour. Luke List, he's an interesting name. Not at all a course that seems to fit his game. But he's in 2018, he's been a slightly different golfer, a better golfer. His stats look good for this course, considering his distance. So, you know, and even though they're taking driver out of his hand on a lot of holes, you got to remember, like, he's going to still hit his four iron, you know, 20 yards further, maybe, than the guys who are just average hitters. So he's still getting extra distance compared to guys that aren't big hitters, and his accuracy should improve with an iron.
Yeah, in his hands. That was my exact thought there. I think what sets Luke List apart on a week to week basis is his distance and how he can pound the driver out there. But we have seen him do pretty well at some other shorter and or tighter courses. He came in. So T7 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Valspar T16, like, he's just been having a great season. If he can do exactly what you said and place those irons where he needs to be placing them in the fairway, I think he can definitely have some success here. However, I do think Cam Smith overall has been like kind of a step up from him, especially last week, seeing what he did in the Masters. And with distance not being a factor at all, like, Cam Smith could be in a very good position here. He didn't play the 2 weeks prior to the Masters, which is good. So it's not like he's been playing 6 weeks straight or anything like that. I think I'm interested in both of them, but I would kind of temper my expectations, not pour my money totally into either one of them.
No love for your guy, Patrick Cantlay?
You know, he's coming off a missed cut. People were really high on him in the Masters, which I was not, and I was very happy I was not. I just, in 9,100 compared to some of the guys below him, I'm going to be looking elsewhere. I think I'm pretty much fade on Patrick Cantlay right now. He's disappointed me one too many times, to be honest.
Yeah, see, that's why I want to play him, especially in a GPP. Like, people definitely got burned on him last week, and in a tournament where they probably played pretty heavy. So, it stings that much more. So I'm going to put him in a GPP for sure.
Yeah, I think there are a few guys in this field that people might be a little sour on, and I think I'll probably look to capitalize elsewhere, but Cantlay, you know, it's an interesting, the 9,000s is definitely someplace you could start building lines if you choose to go that route.
Yeah. All right, hit the eights. We got some interesting names here.
Yeah, this is definitely a pretty, considering the field, this is like another pretty stacked. I don't like to say stacked, like considering these names, but three guys that stand out to me specifically are Kevin Kisner, Emiliano Grillo, and Adam Hadwin. I'd say if I had to choose three, those would be the guys. Grillo, he's had some real, like, actual success as of late, and I doubted him for so long that, like, I'm finally ready to kind of get fully on board here. He had the week off last week. He has not played here before, which is, it's hard to swallow, seeing as so many people around him have like multiple years of course history. They've gotten to come out here and see what's going on, but it's a short enough course that I really do think it's as easy as placing the irons off the tee where you need to place them, which should be common knowledge after a couple practice rounds, and then being able to hit your approaches. He's been making some putts. At 8,600, I think he's a great option. It's not that strong of a field, and we've seen him do pretty well in much stronger fields.
Yeah, I love him this week. I think the course sets up nicely for him. He's been playing really well lately, so I'm gonna use him really heavily again. I might be biased because he won me some contests at the Houston when he came in third, but definitely, like, this is where his price should be, generally speaking, like maybe low eights. You know, he's 8,600. Like, most guys are at least 1,000 above where they should be. So he didn't get that bump, so I'm going to be playing him for sure.
Yeah, he definitely got a little bit of a bump there. But I think if anyone in this crowd is deserving of that bump, I would say it's him. I would go down to, I'll just mention him quick, Bryson DeChambeau. He was there in the Masters, and, you know, I'm not, it's tough, but I just feel like this is a course that he is going to be able to make work for him. Like, he made the cut and he finished tied in 38th last week at the Masters. He stayed relatively quiet. Right. I think people also had some pretty high hopes for him. But in this field, he just strikes me as a guy that will be rolling in some putts and probably up there on the leaderboard. Do you have any feelings for him?
Yeah, he's a really smart golfer, so I think this is the type of course he can excel at. The par fives are shorter, generally speaking. So I'm thinking that's a pretty good opportunity for him to score. That's kind of what he's known for.
Yeah. You know what? I actually just noticed the Bermuda putting is very, very, very poor, actually, for Bryson. I'm actually not sure how many rounds are being put into this, but he is pretty much towards the end of the field here. So I guess keep that in mind. Take caution with him. I didn't notice that previously, but I think an easy pivot. I think someone we both might be a little interested in here, along with possibly the rest of the world, is Adam Hadwin.
Coming on strong.
Definitely coming on strong. I think he was one of the more talked about cheaper guys at the Masters last week. He finished tied in 24th. He has been playing pretty well this season so far. I think he started making some noise with what did he Yeah, so he came in tied ninth in WGC Mexico, which, as I was just saying, you look at this course, and it's just like a very similar type layout with you can't miss the fairway.
He handles tight course as well.
Yeah, and then the Valspar T12, and then another good outing last week at the Masters. I'm into him. I'm into Adam Hadwin here.
Yeah, he's a cash must for me at 8,100.
Yeah, he's gained strokes here over his past few years. He finished tied in 22nd last year, tied in 30th the previous year. So at 8,100, I mean, I like him more than Kevin Na, Ryan Moore. There's definitely some people I would put him above that are priced higher.
Yeah. So yeah, two names we skipped over: Kevin Na, Tyrrell Hatton. GPP considerations. I think Tyrrell Hatton's going to be criminally underowned for as good of a golfer as he can be. He could crash and burn. He has trouble sometimes with the short game, the putter. But if he gets that working, you know, he couldn't get a putt to fall at the Masters, but he wasn't awful. And then Kevin Na has actually got some good results on this course. It's just what Kevin Na shows up to golf. Is it the guy who withdraws after his first tee shot, or is it the guy who finishes top five?
But I mean, yeah, it's pretty much exactly what I would say about the both of them. Tyrrell Hatton, it's like the one thing that keeps standing out to me is that I faded him at the WGC in Mexico, and I was like just following his Twitter, and I faded him because of his Twitter. So I kept seeing his Twitter, and I was pissed because he ended up coming in third. So he's a very good golfer at 8,800. They're both risky plays to me, especially Kevin Na. Like, it's so hard to trust him. So like I said, I mean, I would take Hatton over him, but they're both strictly GPP in my book.
All right, so give me a few names out of the sevens. There's a lot here. A lot of guys got bumped up, you know, the full thousand making it into the sevens that we're not used to seeing there. But there's some guys to make some spots with.
There are definitely some guys. I guess I'll start with the 75 to 79 range. I mean, my favorite is right at the top there. Kevin Chappell is a no for me for anyone. Okay. I mean, I think he was kind of widely accepted like the cheap chalk last week at the Masters, and yeah. I ended up completely fading him because of the fact that he was going to be pretty high owned, I thought. And I don't think he was actually ended up being crazy high owned, but it was a good fade anyway. So, I mean, I got lucky there. I would personally be jumping down to Zach Johnson, and I really like him because kind of what we were just saying earlier, only it's more course history based rather than recent play. Like, you look at his past 5 years, he didn't play last year. He came in T33, missed a cut, T61, T48. He hasn't had that much luck at this course, but Zach Johnson's game is another one that I lump in there with Webb Simpson and Matt Kuchar, that he can keep the ball straight. Yeah. He can hit the greens in regulation. And I think he seems to me like the perfect type of fit for this course. And I think he's probably going to go pretty low owned, and he's only 7,900, which on your average week is going to be like pretty, pretty perfectly priced for him.
Yeah. He's kind of in a, like, buried in a spot there just below the eights. And I agree. I don't think his ownership is going to be high, so he's a nice cash play, and even in a GPP, he's got a chance to maybe top 10 for you. All right, who else?
I think next, I mean, you got to mention Luke Donald here. He just like does the unthinkable of just coming in the finishing top five every single year here, which is very strange.
Yeah.
I mentioned him quickly in the article, and I said for me he's an easy fade because he's just doing a bunch of nothing lately. But I mean, he tied in second, tied 15th, second, tied in third his last 5 years here. He's gained over 54 strokes on the field, which is just absurd. I mean, there's something he loves about it here, and go ahead, play him in cash. But I think just for the sake of being different and hoping he misses the cut, which I guess is nearly impossible seeing as what he's done every single year, I'm probably not going to play him. Do you have any take on?
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. If you're going to tell me his ownership's going to be 15-20%, like, yeah, I'm happy to fade him and cross my fingers and hope that, you know, this is the year that he's in the 30s instead of the single digits. And yeah, I mean, his recent history is just a host of missed cuts. So making the cut doesn't do anything for you this week. You're going to have to be top 10, top 20.
Yeah. Yeah. So going on, there's a lot of names in this range. So I don't want to touch on every single one of them, but I think the next three down really being Xander, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Willie McGirt are all definitely in play here. They haven't been in the greatest form. Someone that stands out to me jumping down, I am very hesitant to name this player just because he seems to be a letdown week after week. But Jason Kokrak at 7,400, it's like he keeps gravitating around this price. And he's had success here 4 years in a row. So he was cut last year, but before that he came T6, T18th, T12, and then T71. So he made the cut that year. But 7,400, we've seen him do a lot in the last year. He's another guy that hits the ball a long way. I don't know. I honestly feel bad recommending him, but like, I know I'm going to be right back on him. I know I am.
Yeah. I think I'm taking a break from the Coke.
That's always smart.
Yeah, there's other guys I think that just offer you a floor, and you know, this week it's not a good week, I think, to take extra risk.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I like to be crazy in that way. And so, I often talk about staying on a guy. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. There's something to be said about that. But so two guys I like in that range that I think are criminally underpriced, Charles Howell, Kevin Streelman. I don't know how Charles Howell is. He's like the one guy whose price went down. And like went down significantly, like $1,600. I don't get that. Do you have any explanation on that for me, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people are just like, my initial response to that is like, oh, Charles Howell, what the hell has he done this year? But you look back at what he has done, and like he's got a
14th and an 18th coming into this.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a top 20. He can. This is all early in the year, a 20th, a 6th, a 14th, and an 18th coming into it. You're very correct about that. And then, yeah, I mean, of the two, Charles Howell does stand out to me. And then, I mean, I also agree
He's a great ball spreader. He's a great ball striker. Good out of the sand. Great greens in regulation. You know, I guess he doesn't give you a ton of upside, but I don't know. I think he's ideal for this course.
Okay, two things I'm going to have to note on these two players just because I'm checking strokes gained on Bermuda, pretty much every single player we're talking about right now. Charles Howell. Oh, man. 84th in the field in his last four rounds, and then worse for his last 8, 12, 24, 50, and 100 rounds there. So putting could be an issue for Charles Howell. However, these stats are based off of – it's a long-term stat we're looking at. So his recent form doesn't come as much into play here. So if we're in agreement that he is kind of improving his putting, and that's what's allowing him to finish where he's been finishing. Like, he's made 11 cuts and 13 starts on the year. That's pretty much every cut in the calendar year, minus the Honda, which was just an extremely difficult playing course. I'm not counting Charles Howell out. And Streelman is like my weekly cash play, and I can't count him out either at 7,300. Like, he's just he's a good price. It's hard to not take note of him at 7,300. And he's been there for like a little while now.
Yeah, he gives up strokes on Bermuda as well. I just checked that. So that's maybe the explanation on those two guys, along with course history. But, you know, they're going to make the cut almost for sure, and they've got a chance to do more. So
yeah, I don't see either one of them blowing up by any means. So I agree with that. Cash play, like cut makers almost for sure.
All right, anybody else before we move on?
I think I'm good to move on.
All right. So I'm going to talk ownership here, then you'll tackle some pricing discrepancies using FanShare Sports as usual. Not a lot making waves this week. That's not unsurprising. You know, like I said, Masters hangover. There's not a lot of names in this field that are drawing much attention. The guy with the most tags right now is Adam Hadwin. So I know I said cash lock for him. That holds true. I may not put him into a GPP or limit the amount of GPPs I put him in based on his ownership being in the 20s for a guy who's a good golfer but not a great golfer. Webb Simpson, Matt Kuchar, also in the 20s there. We went over them. I think they're okay, even chalky a little bit, because of some of what they've done here. Kevin Kisner, 19 tags. Chalky Kisner scares me a good amount. He's been a little bit all over the place this year, starting to get back into form. He had a pretty good Masters. This course should suit him well. You know, the accuracy should come into play, but I'm scared of Kisner, especially a chalky Kisner. DJ, Cam Smith, Luke Donald, Cantlay, Paul Casey, Brian Harman, rounding out the top 10 there.
Was Bud Cauley or Luke Donald listed on there at all?
Luke Donald is in the top 10. Bud Cauley's like 15th. I think at that point, you don't have to be scared off of anybody.
Yeah, especially in a tournament like this. I always am interested. I always put down my possible chalk before hearing you go through this list, because I think it's fun to just see if people who I am interested in just happen to be the chalk. And Matt Kuchar, Kevin Kisner, Adam Hadwin were three of my top four there that I figured might be a little chalky.
One guy I will mention who isn't getting tags that we both kind of didn't like was Mark Leishman. Maybe something there. You know, he is a guy that can score. Same thing, Tyrrell Hatton. You know, single digit tags. Nobody talking about him.
Yeah, Mark Leishman did just finish ninth at the Masters, so something to keep in mind.
Right. just a quick note on Leishman's Masters. Josh Culp on Twitter of Roto World Golf mentioned that the two previous times Leishman had been paired with Tiger, he shot a 68, a 69. And interestingly enough, he had two pretty good rounds being paired with Tiger.
I wish I got that word, because that is actually very interesting. Like, someone in this field, Patton Kizzire, who we've seen not do much of anything lately, who could, I guess, garner some attention this week. The last time I remember actually watching him play was with Tiger at the Honda, and he stunk it up. So playing good with Tiger is definitely
yeah,
something to
the last guy I want to mention here that I'm seeing as kind of a not really being talked about, and kind of surprisingly, is Jim Furyk. He makes it a point to play here. He's 8,000, so probably more than you would normally want to pay for him, but I'm not sure he's a bad play. What are your thoughts on Furyk real quick?
Yeah, I actually was tempted to mention him. I mean, he's got good results here, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he won. Won in 2015.
Yeah, he's won it twice.
Yeah, so, like, pretty much 2013, 14, 15, especially 14, 15, like, did very well.
He won in 2010. He's got a fourth in 2008. It's second in 2006. Like, his game is tailor-made for this course.
Yeah, so he's just another guy like the Luke Donald here. I mean, he did finish.
I'd much rather have Furyk over Donald.
Yeah, and he finished seventh at the Valspar. He followed that up with a miscut at Corrales and Punta Cana a couple weeks ago, which is definitely
not good.
Yeah, that's not a good thing at all, but hey, maybe he was just like having a vacation in the Bahamas. Or that's not the Bahamas. Where is Punta Cana? Wherever Punta Cana is. I don't hate that at all. I agree with you. I would play him over Luke Donald, but like we said earlier, there's a couple guys in between there that I actually really like.
Right.
Before we like move on past these picks, I think there's just a couple of really cheap guys that I would mention real quick, like below the Kevin Streelman range. So Chris Kirk, I wrote a little bit about in the article. I'm actually pretty interested in him at this point at 7,100. He's just like consistently pretty good this year, and like, who knows, maybe we'll see a little bit of a 2018 breakout for him, which would be pretty cool. And then Corey Connors has been doing like crazy things as of late. He hasn't really done much here. He only played in 2015 and was cut. I mean, what he's been doing, I don't know how he is priced at 6,800. So there's a couple guys other than that, like Kelly Kraft did well in Punta Cana, and Lucas Glover, I think people might notice him at 6,800. So Corey Connors and possibly Kelly Kraft are two guys. Kelly Kraft is one of those guys, I feel like when you play him in a bigger field, you're like bound to be upset and like not very happy. Chris Kirk is someone I see making the cut, and then like, who knows, hopefully he does a little better than that. But Corey Connors, someone to look at, in my opinion.
Got it. All right, so hit us with just a little bit of the pricing discrepancies, the more notable ones.
All right, so first off, we got Adam Hadwin is 11,000 on FanDuel and 8,100 on DraftKings. It's not a massive difference, but FanDuel is the sixth top player, and then a top price player at DraftKings, he's 17th. So if you're going to play him somewhere, it would be on DraftKings. Cam Smith is not that huge of a, this was early on for me. So 9,800 FanDuel, 9,000 DraftKings. That's the 20th on FanDuel and the 9th on DraftKings. Probably play him on DraftKings there. Bigger one, Ian Poulter, 9,500 on FanDuel, 9,300 on DraftKings. That's 25th on FanDuel and 7th on DraftKings. I would play him on FanDuel. Is that right? That does not seem right. Let me just double check my information here, make sure I'm not spewing out some Ian Poulter. Where is he priced on DraftKings?
Let me look him up here. Poulter.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. He is the seventh top price guy on DraftKings, which is just
pretty much the same absurd price.
So, I mean, if you're going to play Ian Poulter, you're going to be playing him on FanDuel. Luke Donald is 8,800 FanDuel, 7,700 on DraftKings. That's the 49th top price guy on FanDuel, 23rd on DraftKings. So you should play him on FanDuel if you're going to go the Luke Donald route. Kevin Streelman in a similar boat. There is 8,500 on FanDuel, 7,300 on DraftKings. It's 58th FanDuel and 39th DraftKings. If you're going to play him on FanDuel. And then these ones are a bit more of a discrepancy here. Brant Snedeker is 10-7 on FanDuel and 7-4 on DraftKings. The seventh top priced option on FanDuel and 32nd on DraftKings. He's someone I'm actually very interested on DraftKings.
Sneds yeah. is really good out of the sand.
Yeah, that's very true. I think like he had the Masters off. He's probably not happy about that. Maybe he's coming back and looking to make some money here. Austin Cook and Ross Fisher, both overpriced on FanDuel, being 29th on FanDuel and then 49th and 59th on DraftKings. So if you're going to play Austin Cook or Ross Fisher, both good players. Austin Cook was in the Masters, didn't quite pull it off, but he's a good player, and Ross Fisher is capable of a ton. DraftKings favors them. So, and my last one would be Corey Connors, who on FanDuel is 8,400 and then DraftKings is 6,800. That is the 60th top price guy on FanDuel and the 91st top guy on DraftKings. So DraftKings is favoring Corey Connors, another guy who, like I just said, I'm pretty interested in at this point.
Did you mention Kevin Na?
I did not. I did this very quickly.
He's pretty similar. He's 82 on DraftKings, 89 on FanDuel. That was the only one that I was kind of interested in that I think I didn't hear you say. Still, you know, GPP, Kevin Na, always only GPP, but pretty cheap on FanDuel.
He's the 45th top priced on FanDuel. And then DraftKings, he is the, the 16th. So yeah, Kevin Na on FanDuel, highly favored on DraftKings. So I would go ahead and play him on FanDuel if you're willing to take that risk. He's a great player. He really is. It's just like
draft, when he shows up
DFS wise, yeah, it's always a risk with him.
And real quick, just to get off my chest, we played on FanDuel this week. I know you just got it in New York. I always just dabble in FanDuel. I'm not a big FanDuel guy. I prefer DraftKings. It's where I've got accounts. But what the hell is up with getting the same amount of points second through fifth? Like, second is not the same as fifth, bro. That makes no sense to me.
I totally agree with that. I noticed that, and it was like
huge like discrepancy.
It's like, funny. I never knew that because I could never play FanDuel until last week. I had some luck on it, but I noticed that, and I was thinking the same thing. I didn't say anything to anyone, but I was just happy.
Huge difference in strokes. That could be 5-6 strokes easily. Like, oh yeah, makes no sense.
It could be a huge difference. I was just happy that seeing people sharing their FanDuel lines with me this year before I was able to play it, that they went to the 6-player lineups. So like that was a good thing.
It's never felt like FanDuel's cared about golf. So I don't know. That just rubbed me wrong because I think I had Ricky over there and I'm like, wait, I'm only getting the same amount of points as these other people. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, they're working on it. Maybe one step at a time.
Yeah. Let's throw some darts. So we talked about for this week, looking for a player who was at the Masters, a player who was not at the Masters, and then a comeback player of the week. You got anybody on the tip of your tongue for any of those?
Yeah. All right. So a non-Masters player that I really like this week is Brant Snedeker, who has had a lot of he's had success at this course in the past. We talked about him a little while ago. He's very favorably priced on DraftKings, especially. I think he's a very, very good play on DraftKings this week. He hasn't done like a ton of amazing stuff so far this year, but in this field, he really stands out to me. A Masters player that I liked and that I want to play this week, I'm going to say Matthew Fitzpatrick. He had that Saturday round that propelled him. It was Saturday, right? Not Sunday. I just want to double check this before I say. Yeah, so he shot a 67 on Saturday and then followed it up with a 75 on Sunday, which was disappointing. But Fitzpatrick is capable of a lot. And you put him in a field like this at 7,600 and it's hard to keep your eye off of him. And the other thing is he's gotten cut at this tournament the past 2 years, which I think will only cut his ownership down with some of the names around him. So like, I'm definitely interested in him. And then a comeback player, someone who missed the cut last week for me is going to be Jason Duffner, who, you know, he would know what he was talking about him at the Masters. I thought it was a little strange. I faded him. Like I said, I kept my player pool there pretty tight and it paid, but he has also had luck here. He's made the cut the past 3 years, came T37, T54, and T11 last year. He's gained strokes on the field. He's only 7,800. He missed the cut last week. People are probably not going to be looking too much at him. I'm a Duffner guy, especially this week.
And quick note for anybody unsure, the cut rule is back to what we're used to. It's top 70 and ties. Move on. So for me, my darts, a guy from the Masters that I'm interested in, Xander Schauffele. He had a good round mixed in there. You know, being able to make the cut as a rookie at the Masters is fairly impressive, and to play half decent. You know, I like his form where he's at. His first time playing here, I believe. So you know, people who are hunting in the tournament history are going to pass over him. He's a good young golfer, and I think his game fits here. Guy that was not at the Masters for me, Ryan Armour, super accurate off the tee. He's the third most accurate in driving accuracy, just behind Ken Duke, who doesn't play much and is super old and doesn't hit the ball very far. And then Henrik Stenson, who leaped up quite a bit in the last week. So Armour for his accuracy, and he's only 7,200. That's a pretty good bargain. And then my comeback player is going to be Russell Knox. Coming off the missed cut, he's got great history here. His last 4 years, 11th, 2nd, 18th, 9th. So he's almost top 10 every time he's been here, and every time he's been top 20. Hasn't had the best stretch, a couple missed cuts, a 73rd. But he's also got some top 30s, a 15th mixed in there, 16th. So a little bit of a risk, but for his price, which is 7,800, at a course he should play well at, he's a good GPP play for me as a dart. But that's what we got time for this week, guys. Hit us in Slack chat as always. On Twitter, I'm at @Roto_Juan. Alex is at Donald Remington. Pay attention on Twitter. It's where a lot of last minute stuff comes up. So follow us, tweet at us. You know the deal. Alex, good luck this week. I don't think you're going to have a shot at any Tiger Jam tickets, but hopefully.
Hey, you know what? There's a qualifier and I'm back in it, baby. Trying to bring a friend with me.
All right. All right. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks for listening. Good luck this week.
All right. Take care.